Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Answerable Questions with Questionable Answers, the show in which we try and answer some of life's meaningful and meaningless questions. My name is Marcus. That's Sarah.
It's me.
And that guy's Chris.
Konnichiwa.
Oh, love that. Love that. Now, ladies and gentlemen, words like awesome and amazing are often banded around willy-nilly to describe any old thing. Seldom are we genuinely in awe or actually amazed by something or someone. But when we are, it is a wonderful or intriguing experience. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we are asking, what blows your mind? Sarah, get us off to a good start.
Okay, right. I've got a fact that I have to share with you that when I heard this, I literally had to sit there for a while and think about it and figure it out and be like, what? Mm-hmm. Okay.
We've only got half an hour.
Okay, buckle up. So John Tyler, who was the 10th president of the United States, he was born in 1790.
Yeah.
He has two grandsons who are still alive.
What?
That is...
Yeah. 1790.
Not great grandchildren.
Nope. No, actual grandsons. So basically, it just turns out that like everyone in the Tyler family has kids really old. So I think he was 63 when his son was born, and then that son had kids when he was in his 70s.
Wow.
Blimey. That's James Brown-esque.
Bernie Eccleston or whatever his name is.
It's just that one about 80 years old. Isn't it? And obviously, like, I think they all had, like, you know, got through a few wives by that point and whatever.
I was going to say, at the risk of changing this slightly, how old were their wives?
You know what? I don't know. I can find out for you, but
because this is because I can imagine if Leonardo DiCaprio, if he has offspring, this could go in the same direction.
His grandkids will be alive in 300 years.
They're all injecting monkey embryos and stuff just to stay alive, aren't they?
But that is madness, because obviously life expectancy has generally speaking increased over the years, of course. So that is a great start to the show.
You are so welcome.
I like the way you said, I just had to sit and think for a while. And when you said it, I thought, oh, and I just sat there and thought for a while. And then I remembered that we're actually, the whole premise of a podcast is to not just be in silence. So I was like, okay, I better think quickly on this one.
I think it's important to do something that no one else is doing. So we're just going to have 10 minutes of silence, everybody.
That'll
be our little side podcast. Just 10 minutes of silence with Sarah, Chris and Marcus.
Yeah. Let's think about a man's grandchildren, a dead man's grandchildren for 10 whole minutes. Blimey. Oh, dearie me. Well, that's incredible. Have you got anything else up your sleeve? You've got us hooked.
Okay, well, on a similar note, another thing, I heard a story, and I did go and fact check this. There's a story in the New York Times from 1979. Mm-hmm. So a woman, begins off quite sadly, a woman tried to take her own life in 1979 by jumping off the 86th floor of the Empire State Building, which is obviously pretty high up.
Pretty
lethal. She survived, and they think it's because a gust of wind blew her back, because she landed on a ledge 20 feet below. She only had a fractured pelvis.
That is extraordinary.
So it blew her back, so she was past it and it lifted her up.
No, I think it was like she sort of jumped out and the wind was like, nah, back we go. Not today, I'm afraid.
I mean, without trying to sort of pour cold water over this, was it a question of she just jumped out and landed on that ledge?
It was like a 3-foot ledge, apparently.
What, so the chances, the trip?
Small the chances.
What would it be? The trajectory? Would that be the right word of the jump?
Trajectory.
Trajectory, thank you. sorry about that.
Physics is
the angle.
Or language.
Are they saying that the angle which she would have come down at not been possible to land on that ledge, if you see what I mean?
You know what? I've got to be honest, I didn't read that far into it.
But then I suppose if they're saying this in that newspaper, I mean, I know the newspapers sometimes lie. Yeah, I understand that. But you wouldn't put that detail in, would you?
And it was sort of said that like they weren't actually sure what had happened, that but that was the theory. So it was obviously that it wasn't just like, you know, she misjudged the jump.
Yeah. Was she a bit pissed off?
Say that again.
Was she a bit pissed off?
I was thinking about it. Yeah.
You know what? I am actually going to find out at some point what did happen to her, because I hope that, you know, getting that second chance, she did go on to live a long and happy life.
You'd hope so, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
It would kind of. Yeah. No, I don't need to dwell too much on that, of course. But that is amazing, though. That is mind blowing.
I have a weird sort of. It's a tiny bit comedy. I know that it's not, because, you know, she was trying to commit suicide. But it reminds me of that film Ice Age, you know, where the little squirrel is trying to get his nut all the time and just always goes wrong at the last minute.
Yeah.
And I can imagine her having this series of trying to kill herself, and then something else comedy would happen to thwart it, and then something else. And in the end, she gives up.
I mean, presumably a lot had been going wrong, which is why she was trying to do that.
Yes. Yeah, you would think so. But yeah, I really hope that she did have a sort of a new lease of life after that. Because, I mean, to survive jumping off the Empire State Building, like,
yeah,
that's mind-blowing.
Yeah. Oh, that is incredible.
Strong start.
It's a very strong start. I'm gonna bring one to the table. And it actually involves New York City. The idea, well, it's not just an idea. It's mega cities have me in awe.
I think
a mega city, often described as a city typically with a population over 10 million people, mm-hmm. although it depends if you do the metropolitan area or how you kind of rate it, because London is considered a mega city, and often the population of London is talked about 8.5-9 million people. And I'm not sure if let's not get tangled up in that, but you know what I mean by a mega city. The BBC did a documentary on mega cities. They took 8 of them. Moscow was there. Mm. I think Istanbul may have been, New York City, Mexico City, Tokyo, every city in China, by the looks of things. Yeah. You know, they build mega cities weekly, crying out loud. I don't want to make it too sort of London centric, this chat, but having been recently to New York and Mexico City as well, to walk around those places and London as well, I'm just absolutely in awe of how it all works, how it all runs, the diversity of people or the different types of people. So Mexico City wouldn't be as diverse in terms of sort of culture and ethnicity as, say, New York and London, but you still get a very wide range, and we're all individuals at the end of the day, so if you have that many people, then of course you're going to get diversity, because, as I say, we're all individuals, but it just blows my mind of all the different sort of talents and the you know, in London, the cuisine or how things look, but also the different characteristics, the behaviors, you know, because it's not all good. You know, often these kind of mega cities are sort of seen as, to quote Obi-Wan, you know, hives of scum and villainy, and your crime rates and
where you
and
live,
so on.
Maybe.
No, that's just, I've got a monopoly on that. But you know, in 1800, only 3% of the world's population lived in cities. Mm. By the end of 20th century, it was 47%, and in 1950, there were 83 cities with populations exceeding 1 million. By 2007. That had gone up to 468. And in 2017, there were 34 megacities on the planet. Now, a lot of them are in Asia, in places like India and China especially, and so on. But I find it incredible. And the BBC documentary is worth looking at that. Just looking at, like, transport, how to get across cities. I mean, before the lockdown, my wife and I, we went over to friends of ours who live in East London, the other side of the city. Now, it's only about 4.5 miles away. Mm. It took us over 2 hours.
3 years.
Drive. Yeah. it's absolute madness. You know, the way it runs, everything. To looking at, you know, your services like the fire brigade, the police, all the rest of it. But how these cities, whatever you may think of them, whether you like them or not, because they're not to everybody's taste, of course, they're so vibrant. There's just so much energy and life there. And as I say, that may not be for you. I don't want to kind of give it all, oh, well, if you're not living in one of these cities, then you're missing out. I don't mean that at all, having lived most of my life outside a city, of course. But I just I'm in complete in awe of them.
You know what does actually, like, when you were talking, occurred to me that I actually find a bit mind-blowing? And we've talked about kind of time and sliding doors and that kind of thing in previous episodes, but kind of the thing that those mega cities, you know, for example, like London, where we live, at some point, that was a little village.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, London, they say, is a collection of villages, don't they? Which is quite, which it sort of is actually in terms of layout.
It's two cities, isn't it?
Yeah. And like, because I've lived in areas, and like, because I'm a bit of a history nerd, like, I like to kind of like research the history of the area I live in. Mm-hmm. And like, places that I've lived, they said, oh, you know, it actually used to be a farming area. This kind of thing, like, that blows my mind, that like, this was a village and now it's one of the biggest cities that there is.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, have you seen those documentaries, The Secret History of Our Streets?
No.
Oh, you would love
that
it.
That sounds brilliant. Up my street.
And it is very much, it is based in London. I think there's actually one for Scotland as well, for Glasgow. And it will say that. It will say, like, you know, this is Camberwell 200 years ago, which is an area in South London, for those who don't know. And it was previously a farm. And then you can start to see the development of the area. And that was going to be my question to you, Marcus. Are you blown away by that side of it, where it's developed over a long period of time, or the brand new implemented mega cities, or is it just all mega cities?
Yeah, I think the former, because I think the latter, like I say, if you go to, well, not that I've been to China, but you see the kind of cities that they're making, and often described as quite soulless and so on and so forth. But it is that kind of how the city has developed and what it is now. You know, Mexico City was built on a, you know, on a bog, essentially. I mean, it's at elevation, but if you were starting up a city now, you wouldn't choose that land that it's built on, and how it's just gone out and out and out. And especially when you fly into some cities, flying over Buenos Aires in Argentina, which I think is classified as, I'm pretty sure it's classified as a mega city.
Yeah.
It's just, or London even, you know, flying into London as a lot of us have done, it just goes on and on and on. It's absolutely extraordinary. I was in Manchester not that long ago in the north of England, and Manchester's, you know, got a lot going for it, and it's a vibrant city and all that kind of stuff. But I remember I was in, staying at this hotel in the center of town on quite a high floor, high floor up, and looking out the window, I could see the edge of the city, if you see what I mean. I could see a bit of greenery when it became, you know, you just can't do that in so many other places.
Yeah.
No. You go up the Empire State Building or Rockefeller Center or whatever. I mean, obviously New York, I know it's on the coast eventually, but I find that absolutely extraordinary. And I think as well, how it plays out in my experience certainly is, I think the reason why I'm in awe of it is, and if you know what I mean by this, I'll say it from the first person. I can never get my head around it completely. I can never fully grasp London and go, I've got you. This is mine. I've got it.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
And
it's always changing, isn't it?
It's always changing.
It's always morphing.
Exactly. The size of it, the amount of people, the differences in people and whatnot. And that can be to its detriment slightly. And I know some people can move to London, they can feel very lonely, it's difficult to get community, all that sort of stuff. But it can be done. But it is a bigger challenge. But when I lived in, say, Edinburgh, now I was a lot younger then, but when I go back to Edinburgh, I turn up there. Edinburgh's what, got around 500,000 people, something like that. It's a far smaller city, although it is a capital city and very vibrant as well. I walk around and go, I've got it. I can get my head around Edinburgh. I love Brighton as well on the south coast of England. Again, I'd know it a little bit less, but you can do that. You can grasp it, if you see what I mean. Yeah. And again, that has, there's pros to that. But what I love about London, you can't get your head around it, but that means you're always intrigued. You know, there are so many areas, a bit like, as I say, you go to New York, you can go to New York and see all the main tourist bits and the commercial bits and so on. And then you could go back for another week and see more of the neighborhoods and have a totally different experience. And it blows me away.
Yeah. I once went to Lagos for work, probably about 14 years ago.
Oh, man, yeah. Think, that was on the BBC thing as well, the megacity one, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's like 20 million, or it was at the time. I don't know what it is now.
Outrageous.
And the driving is what blows my mind. Is that and any of these sort of megacities that don't, you know, drive the same way we do, it's just, you just think there's like a four-lane highway, but there's probably about 8 cars across the breadth of it, all at slightly different angles, and they're inching inch by inch just to kind of snake their way through. And I remember just thinking that, I mean, that actually blows my mind how people can do that, and how they, as you said, how to traverse a city on that scale is amazing. But I guess, like anything, if you're born into it, that's just the way, it's just what you do, isn't it? It's just how you do it and stuff like that as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, going to sort of a, you know, and I, you know, as you said, like we live in what's designated as a mega city, but then you go to some of these other ones and you're like, gosh, we don't live in a mega city. We live in a little hamlet in the, you know, which is nice.
Well, like, yeah, I mean, what I said, like, that's what I mean. When I went to Mexico City, you know, that again, you can go up these, this sort of particular tower, a restaurant at the top, and you go up there and look around and you go, but I reckon if you, I don't know how high you'd have to be to see the edge of this place, you know, and it is bigger than London, you know, the population, it was the biggest city in the world at the time. You know, you're talking like 25, you know, ridiculous amounts. Rio as well, be another one, Istanbul, absolutely extraordinary places, but there's so much. Yes, there's a lot of say poverty in a lot of places, relative poverty in London that you might not have in other parts of England or the UK, which you do, but if you see what I mean, the divide in wealth is a very worrying thing in a lot of these cities, and it's very concerning.
Yeah.
However, you know, like I say, sort of parking that, or well, not necessarily parking it, but it's the whole thing. The whole thing is just not boring.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
I think what's interesting about that is that I know what you mean, actually, the more you talk about it, and the more it's, I think for me, it's more when I see it, it's humanity that I find mind blowing. That, as you said, like all those people that you walk past or you go past, for me, they've all got their own stuff going on in their heads. They've all got their own lives and their jobs, but somehow humanity is beautifully interconnected and weaved together. Mm-hmm. And there's all these kind of web of relationships and networks and jobs and stuff like that. Yeah. I think when I first moved to London, I was overwhelmed by that. Actually, I'd just be there on, say, Oxford Circus and just go, like, gosh, there's a lot of people. And oh my gosh, there's a lot of things going on and stuff as well. Yeah. That is truly mind blowing for me. Is again, I guess, humanity itself as a nebulous amount of people.
Something that's, sorry if this is a bit morbid, something that's just occurred to me when we were talking about like London or you know, big cities and humanity and stuff, is something that I sometimes think to myself if I'm like on the tube or whatever. It's like, I reckon there's someone on this train who's a murderer.
Do you know what? I was going to say something, but not quite in the same way you are, or you have expressed it there. I think in sort of these sort of bigger cities, you can meet and just walk past such a range of people. You can bump into a Hollywood A-lister, or you can bump into some nutter who's going to do something horrible, or an old friend, or I don't know, a juggler who's dressed up as a nun, or do you know what I mean? Like, absolutely anything.
It could be anyone, and you don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know. That is the beauty of it, I think.
I've never thought that, Sarah, but I think I will now. So thanks for planting that.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Chris, you've not brought anything to the table yet.
So I've been thinking about this and thinking about what truly blows my mind. And for me, it's the concept of the universe and how...
I didn't think we were going to get bigger than megacities, but you've sufficiently kicked me to the curb there.
Yeah, it's the fact that they're expanding. And I'm always like, expanding into what? Like, what is it expanding? What's beyond that? So I did a tiny bit of research before I came on air and looked like an idiot. And... it's just this thing. I watched this TED talk, and this guy was saying what we're taught when we're younger is that the universe means everything. So that, I think that's where I, for a long time, was like, but if everything's in the universe, then what is outside of it that we're expanding into? And that is apparently the problem. We're thinking, what are we expanding into? And then it goes on to Einstein's theory of relativity, which sees space and time as interconnected. And that, again, blows my mind, because I don't know how they're interconnected. Like, what does that even mean?
None of us know, by the way, pal. You're in good company.
So actually, so normally we try and answer the questions, but if any of our listeners out there actually know these answers, please, you know, send them in, email to us what it all means. Preferably do it in a very short cartoon video form would be the best for me.
That would be ideal. I hear China are building their own universe, so it's going to be okay.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I think the universe is mind-blowing, full stop.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, I know you hate space and all that, Sarah.
Yeah, I've got to be honest. This kind of chat, I'm just like, I understand that it's mind-blowing, but I'm just like, I've got to be honest, I just don't really care.
No.
Yeah.
Like, my brain doesn't really have the capacity to be like, but what is beyond the universe?
But there is, that's what gets me, but there is something, right? So that's where I'm like, I can't get my head around what that would look like.
As long as it's not going to bother me, I'm all right with it.
As long as it's not a murderer on the tube.
Exactly.
And it, I think on that as well, on this video, it's quite interesting. It's by a guy called Brian Greene. And he talks about how, I think in 2012, the Nobel Prize for Physics went to two scientists who fully developed the kind of multiverse theory. But he talks about how our universe is finely tuned for life. And that, again, blows my mind.
That is quite cool, I suppose.
Yeah, like all these kind of billions of planets and stars, and how if something was slightly off, life would cease to exist or wouldn't be able to exist in the first place. And that's crazy, because there is a book out there, I never read it, but I heard it talked about on a show once, called The Eerie Silence, which is essentially saying there's either shed loads of life forms out in the universe or we are it. Like there's no in between. Mm-hmm. And it was this concept that everything is so finely tuned that, you know, there's a high probability that we are literally out, the only sort of life form out there as well.
Mm. So yeah. Well, it makes you wonder how it's all there and why it's all there.
Yes, Marcus. And that's that's the other thing that blows my mind, is I am trained to be a vicar, is atheism. I can't get over how we don't...
Hang on, you're trying to be a vicar, but atheism...
It blows my mind. Yeah, how...
Oh, okay. I was thinking to you, you might do yourself a job there, pal.
It's brilliant. Should all subscribe. No, I'm joking. It's just the fact that, you know, we know very little about life in our universe. We know little about ourselves and these things. So to then dismiss the concept of anything other as completely not non-existent, I don't know how you could dismiss that out of hand. It just, so for me, it's like, I don't know, maybe it's just me. I like to be broad-minded. I like to think about these bigger questions, unlike Sarah.
Hey!
So,
space related, anything else I'm fine with.
I just, for me, it just is like, how can you just dismiss it when we don't have all the facts?
But people might not be dismissing the belief in God out of hand. They might have studied it, really looked into it, and that's the conclusion that they've come to.
Yeah, there is that, but there is, I think the thing with science is it always explains how things happen and it always ignores that why question, doesn't it? I mean, that's the classic example.
Well, but it's not built for that. It's not the tool to use for how to explain why is science. Science is great at what it does.
But it can't ignore it.
It'd
be like...
No, we can't ignore it, but science can.
But if you base your whole life on science, then I think...
Yeah, well, okay, so that would be the conclusion that I would come to on that is
philosophy plays just as big a part in these things as just, you know, proving things through scientific theory or fact, I guess.
Yeah, I would say so.
I find this interesting. The desire to drink points to substance that can satisfy our thirst, right? Mm-hmm. And the desire to eat points to the substance that can satisfy our hunger. And so I have to be open-minded. Is it really so strange to think that our lifelong desire, which we all clearly exhibit, is that we have meaning and that there's purpose, and that might point forward to someone who might tell us who we are and what we're really for? I think that's where I can't get my head around just closing off the concept of purpose and the why that is always so associated with kind of meaning and things like that as well.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's going to be a good vicar. He's going to be good. I can't wait.
Chris, it's why we're in the business, myself.
It's why we're in the business.
Well, from the universe and the meaning of life, Sarah, anything to bring to this?
You always know I'm going to bring it down.
Follow up on that.
Well, no, actually, you know what? Possibly slightly related is something that does blow my mind is... Mm-hmm. Acts of kindness, and we've even done a show on this, but I think it's particularly the sort of the selfless ones, you know. And I think something that particularly gets me is people who donate their organs, you know, donate a kidney or something while they're still alive.
Yeah.
Yep.
That I find really mind-blowing, of like, you're prepared to literally give a part of your body away to, you know, I know it's not like super, super risky, but you are risking your life.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you something. There's a regular listener to this podcast who often contributes, old Keith Wren.
Keith Wren, who
we know from church, delightful soul. And one of our friends has been diagnosed with cancer recently and is having a tough old time, but there's a little flicker of hope in there. And Catherine was straight away on the chat to my wife and saying, well, if she needs any organs to donate, you know, that kind of thing, you know, I'd be quite happy to get involved. It blew me away.
It's mind-blowing. Yeah. It really is, isn't it? That, like, people can be like that.
Yeah, yeah.
People who just suddenly decide to give away loads of stuff and or any of that things, you know, where people go above and beyond.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Purely for somebody else. It just, it blows my mind and it gives me hope.
Yeah. I think some people are quite wired like that. I've got a friend and she, every day, you know, when you talk, just blows my mind by that her automatic response is to sacrifice or to give or to just, you know, reach out to people. As where I think for some of us, it's more like, I probably should do that, so I will.
Mm.
Or sometimes I'll ignore it and I won't. But hers isn't even a thought of I probably should do it. It's just a natural instinct to go and do these things. That is mind blowing actually when you put it that way, Sarah. That it's just, you know, acts of kindness. It is amazing.
And if you haven't listened to it, go and listen to our show on acts of kindness because that was nice. I've got one final one that I'll share. It sounds really mundane. But it really does blow my mind. The postal service. Literally. So, like, right, emails and texts and phone calls, like, fine, I can, like, yeah, right, the magic of electricity?
The web.
Whatever it is that does that. But the fact that I could write you a letter with my own fair hand and you could be on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
And it's literally the very thing I held in my hand will get to you. Mm-hmm. That is wild. And who knows what happens to that letter? Like, it goes on a train, on a plane, in a lorry. Who knows? But it gets there. That's amazing.
I find it amazing that, yeah, you're right. But not even on the other side of the world. If you post a letter and you do it first class in, say, London, it can be in Aberdeen the next day.
Yeah.
Now, that's mad.
I don't find that mind-blowing at all.
Do you not?
No, it just makes sense. You put it somewhere, someone picks it up, they take it to someone else, they think it's nice. That's not mind-blowing.
Yeah, no, it's not. I was only joking.
Piss on my parade?
You've got one.
Yeah, you've triggered my thoughts. So thank you for that, Sarah. A photograph is mind-blowing to me. Mm. Like, that is a capture of a moment on a material thing. Like, how has it caught what is in my vision and put it on a bit of paper?
Yeah. How? Sarah, do you want to
I don't know it's refractions of light.
No, I that don't think that's my blame. No, yeah. No, I don't care.
I mean, what if I sent that photograph to someone in the post? Would that be mind-blowing?
Okay, fine. Then we're both happy. We're both happy then.
And it arrives in a mega city.
Yeah.
I have a couple just to finish. this is a rather silly one. People who can draw. It's the act of drawing.
I'm with you on that.
I am so crap.
Same.
Embarrassingly bad at drawing. You remember, like, do you remember, like, Heartbeat?
Yeah.
When they play that little jingle and you'd be like, oh, Sarah, aged 4, this is what she's done. And it would be like just a squiggle of colours. And that's me. I promise you, I struggle drawing stick men. And when I was at university years ago, if we were really bored, heady days, we'd sit around and one of my other flatmates was just as bad as me. And we would say, all right, somebody would give us a topic or
life drawing
in
that flat.
Yeah, exactly. And we would someone say, all right, draw a person or a car or something. And we would both have a certain amount of time to draw. And then we would show each other what we'd done and we'd be laughing at each other, just how crap we are. But the final thing, for me is the tide of the Thames. The tide of the Thames River in London, because it's a river I live quite close to. It fascinates me. Every time I walk past, I'm like, oh, it's very low. The tide's very low. I've only seen this 137 times before.
Is it just the high and low tide? that gets
yeah
you.
That it over it can fluctuate over 6 meters. That, ladies and gentlemen, is mind-blowing. I think you'll agree. Because, like, there are parts of, like, the embankment quite close to where I live where you can walk, you can stand on pretty much the riverbed, although it's all sort of stones and whatnot, so you don't get muddy. And you can stand by, right by the river, very, very close. Well, if you'd wait a few hours, you would be completely submerged in water. You'd be way above your head. And often people who park their cars, well, not often, actually, once in a while, people who park their cars a little bit too they can be in a bit of trouble. I once saw a man who parked his car, because the tide comes right up, right, sometimes like right across the road down there in Old Putney. And I saw a man who saw his car. He could drive it away, but it was obviously difficult to get to. So he was there. He had a cigar in his mouth, flat cap on. And he just dropped, he took off his shoes, dropped his trousers, off came the kecks, and he just marched over to his car and drove it out because he didn't want to get his shoes or trousers wet. Wow.
That takes a certain kind of confidence, doesn't it?
That's mind-blowing, isn't it?
Up, there you go. There you are, ladies and gentlemen. There you are. Any more for any more? Are we done?
Yeah.
Mind-blowing stuff. I think we've blown everybody's minds far too much. So let's all calm down and have a cup of cocoa or something, or however you like to live your life. There we are, ladies and gentlemen. We got the end of it. Thank you very much for listening to Answerable Questions with Questionable Answers. It's been an absolute pleasure. We're on social media, of course, at AQQAPod on Instagram and Twitter. Do get involved there. Give us a lovely glowing review on iTunes, the kind of review that will blow our minds. But until next week, thanks, Chris.
Cheers.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks, Marcus.
Thank you, good listeners. See you next week.